Okay, good evening to you all. So this evening, we have these occasional evenings where we sort of focus a bit more directly perhaps on meditation, so that's one of these evenings. I think we're going to do something a little bit different from what we normally do. To start with, and for some of you this might be a slightly different way of approaching meditation. I think over the last, over the last years I've become increasingly sort of interested in chanting as a meditative practice. So we're going to do a bit of chanting together. What we're going to do, in fact, is that we're going to do three different so-called mantras. I'm not going to sort of go into any detail, it'll take me too long, but anybody that doesn't know, a mantra could be understood as a kind of sound symbol. So just as an image, say the image of the Buddha represents a certain state of mind, you could say, symbolic of a certain way of being. So a mantra, which are usually associated with various different figures, different kind of archetypal representations of the enlightened mind. So a mantra is a sort of a sound equivalent to an image. So just as sometimes we use image, maybe during meditation, and of course we use it in all sorts of ways in normal life. And just as we use image to try and encourage or provoke or support a particular mental state, a particular way of being and feeling in the world, we can do the same with mantra. So mantra has always been used for many thousands of years in Buddhist practice, because it's a particularly effective way of working with the mind. And it's partly such an effective way because it's a very embodied practice, particularly when we vocalize the mantra. Sometimes mantras are done internally, so they're not sounded. But when we vocalize a mantra, what it does is it allows the practice to become embodied, if you like. It's something that we're doing with our body as well as with our mind. So this is one of the significance of the use of mantra in spiritual practice, is that it's a kind of bringing together of the mental and physical aspects. Yeah. So this is one particular way, or reason why we might use mantra. Often mantra is used sort of devotionally, and if you come here on Fridays where we have pujas, which roughly means something like worship, you would do mantra in a devotional setting. And of course, whenever we do mantra, it has this implication for people that have those associations with it. But if you don't have those associations with it, it's fine just to sort of see it as a more sort of yogic practice. Yeah, you might not know what the words don't usually mean anything actually, they're usually sort of names. So it's a call, mantra in a way is a calling of a name. And by calling the name, as it were, we invoke the particular qualities of that figure. So what we're going to do tonight is we're going to do three separate mantras. And these three mantras are associated with the three principal so-called bodhisattvas. Okay, maybe some of you are not familiar with this idea of bodhisattvas. I haven't really got time to go into it. We can always talk about it later. Again, we can see a bodhisattva as a sort of symbolic, archetypal, ideal representation of a particular aspect of enlightenment. That's one way you can see it. And usually, or sometimes it's said that there's three sort of basic facets or aspects of the enlightened mind. And compassion, with them in energy. And we're quite familiar probably with the compassion and wisdom element, awareness, kindness. Very much what a lot of our meditative practice is orientated towards, is development of some level of awareness, some sentiment of kindness. But there's this third one as well, energy. And energy can be seen in all sorts of ways, really. I think here, I'm suggesting it's a way of experiencing practice as an embodied practice. So energy, in a way, represents these more subtle, energetic aspects of our experience. So we won't worry about that too much, but we'll just see how we go on with it. So what we're going to use to, if you do the puja, you have these three mantras as the first three mantras of the concluding mantras of the puja. So some of them you will be familiar with them. So it's Avalokiteshvara, representing compassion. Manjugosha, representing wisdom, and Vajrapani representing energy. We're going to swap them around a little bit. We're going to start with energy because in a way it seems to me most basic in a way. And then we're going to do compassion, and then we're going to do wisdom. So we're going to swap them around a little bit. And what we're going to do, we're going to chant the mantra 108 times, which are quite short mantras, so it doesn't take that long. When we've done it, I'll ring the bell, and then we'll just sit with the effect of doing that for a little while, then we'll have the next one. Okay? We'll do them all in the sort of style that you get at the end of the puja, so it's quite a sort of monotone, it's quite sort of flat. And I think when we're chanting mantras, meditative practice, what we're trying to get to is something quite close to our natural voice, our speaking voice. We're not singing. For a lot of people, once you start singing, this isn't true for everybody if you're an experienced singer. But if you're not an experienced singer, usually for most people, once you start singing, you start tensing up, particularly around the throat, around the chest. And this isn't what we're trying to do. When we use mantra in this way, we're trying to sit as far as possible just in the meditative posture that we'd use for silent sitting. And we're just trying to let the voice be quite natural, so it's going to be quite close to your speaking voice, if you like. And we're not going to worry too much about being in tune, yeah? We're going to listen to each other, so it's a collective practice, it's this collective aspect, we listen to each other, kind of tune in with each other in a sense, but just let that happen. So, you know, I'm just saying this because I used to be very much like this myself, you know, some of us have a kind of horror of singing with others, you know, singing in public or whatever it is. Well, we're not singing, we're chanting, and it is kind of different. And it's not, what's important as far as possible is that you try and experience practice in the body. So you try and feel the vibrational quality of a chant in the body and allow the body to open and relax to it. Okay? Anyway, we'll make of it what we will. One reason I've just mentioned very briefly, because I think it's personal. One of the reasons I really like chanting is that it gives you a way of working with sort of effort, meditatively speaking. So this idea of effort is completely central to meditative practice of any sort, really. So if you try too hard, you get tense. If you don't try hard enough, you just sort of lose energy. It just dissipates. So the traditional analogy for this is usually like a string of a musical instrument, yeah? It's too tight or too loose, yeah? So it has to be just right. And this is the same in meditation. We have to learn. And for most of us, it is a matter of learning. We have to learn how to use and what sort of quality of energy we need in order to meditate effectively. And this is quite difficult to do because you come to meditation with whatever tendency you have. So if you're a willful person, you come to meditation with willfulness. If you're a lazy person, you come to you come to meditation with your tendencies. And of course these tendencies aren't fixed, they fluctuate. But if you're a very willful person, it isn't going to feel to you that you're being willful when you meditate. And that's just normally how you are, that's how you go about things. It might be appropriate in a gym or work or whatever. Actually, from a meditative point of view, it's not appropriate. Willfulness and meditation just doesn't work in the long run. It kind of works in the short term. You can sort of force it in a way for a while, a few years perhaps. Anyway, so mantra gives you quite a concrete way of feeling into this, because when you're doing mantra, if you try too hard, you'll get quite exhausted quite quickly. After about 20 or so, you just feel kind of done in, you know. And on the other hand, if you don't put any sort of effort in, it'll just sort of fade away. The mantra gives you a kind of way of feeling into the sort of effort you're bringing to what you're doing. And the effort is always, in a way, the effort is the same as the posture, yeah, or the same how the posture should be ideally, but the posture should be relaxed, but nevertheless aware and alive, yeah. Anyway, we'll see how it goes. I'm taking a bit longer. One other thing, we're going to do the first one in a rather different way. I know a few of you have done this with me before. What we're going to do is, with the Vajrapani mantra, it's a very short mantra. Vajrapani, as I say, represents energy. You start blue in colour, usually surrounded by flames. I should have put a little picture of him, but never mind. Anyway.
Is it?
Eh?
Is it?
Oh,
it's on the wall, big tank armour.
Oh, good. Okay, we can have a look at that later. Anyway, so it's just Om Vajrapani Hum is the mantra. But what we're going to do is that we're going to put an emphasis on the final syllable there, the Hum. And we're going to just try and expel all the air from the body with that syllable. So it's going to become a sort of like Hum. And we're going to do that. And how we're going to do this is by contracting the muscles of the pelvic floor, then up through the abdomen. So just like if you were trying to stop yourself weeing, those muscles there, we're going to contract that and then sort of up through. So, hung, so we're sort of pushing. If you do yoga, you know, quite a lot of the pranayama do this sort of thing. But, so we're going to be pushing out the air with a little bit of force. So you don't feel into this sort of gradually. Just, well, it's quite strenuous to do it 108 times, so don't go too mad to start with. And we don't want you straining yourself and suing Janan or whoever. Okay, so it would be Om Vajrapani Hung, something like that. Hung, you can just get that sort of, but hung, you're sort of pushing it out. So at the end of it, there should be very little air left in the body. So as you relax, the air is taken down quite naturally. Yeah, that makes sense. So we're pushing out the air. So we're going to do this because, we'll do it and we'll see how you get on. Maybe you'll get the idea why we're doing it, by doing it. Okay, so I'll start the mantras and so I'll say, just sort of feel your way into them. Try and sort of stay with it. So it means not trying too hard, but just staying with it. do Vajrapani energy, Avalokiteshvara, Om Mani Padme Hum, and finally Manjushri Manjushri, Om Mara Pajana Di. So we just sit quietly for a few minutes. Just let the sitting bones settle a little bit. Maybe just sort of breathing out there through the sitting bones. As you breathe, just imagine there's a kind of the energetic connection there going down into the earth below you. Sort of breathing up and down into the earth there, into the pelvis, into the bowl of the pelvis there. Going down to the lower abdomen. So we're just using our awareness, using our breath to encourage the awareness down low into the body. And we might imagine just letting go there in the hips. There's a lot of holding for most of us in the upper thighs, buttocks. So we want to imagine just letting go of the legs. And when we let go of the legs, with some stability comes into the posture. So if there's a kind of tension in the upper thighs there, posture always remains slightly unstable, that's the sense of it. Let go in the legs, posture becomes more stable. Nice, just invite the face, invite your face to soften. So we try and keep the posture while we do this, keep the posture. So just as if we were doing a silent meditation, it's a meditative practice we're doing here. Om Vajrapani Hum, 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 Om Vajrapani Hum,
Om Vajrapani Hum. 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 Om Vajrapani Hum.
secondly, we'll have a look at touch of our representing or embodying compassion. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Manjugosha. Manjushri representing wisdom. So just be a bit uncomfortable, just take a moment to settle yourself. Om Marapajana Di. 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 Om
Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi. Om Bhajanadi.
Charles Bukowski, Bluebird. There's a bluebird in my heart that wants to get out, but I'm too tough for him. I say, stay down, I don't want anybody to see. There's a bluebird in my heart that wants to get out, but I pour whiskey on him and inhale cigarette smoke. And all the whores and the bartenders and the grocery clerks don't know that he's in there. There's a bluebird in my heart that wants to get out. But I say, if you want to mess up the works, you want to screw me up, you want to blow the book sales in Europe, there's a bluebird in my heart that wants to get out. But I'm too clever for him. I let him out sometimes at night when no one's around. And I say, look, I know you, I know you're there, so don't be sad. And I put him back inside. But he's singing a little now. I haven't completely killed him. And we sleep together like that, with our secret pact. And it's so nice, it's enough to make a man weep. But I don't weep, do you?